Coming up on issue 17 of the Crit Hit Audio Zine, we're going to go through some admin stuff and find out why there was no issue last week put out. Is it because I was so, emotionally invested in preparing myself for the Weekend of Sorrow, as I like to call it, with the double threat of Endgame and the big battle on Game of Thrones, or was it something else? Spoilers, it was something else. And then we're going to go through some voicemails. Apparently, I had some voicemails that I had no fucking idea that were there because Anchor's acting weird about notifying me about these kinds of things. And then we're going to talk about streamlining rules and sort of what got me in that mindset of looking at using the least amount of rules to convey the most amount of games. Finally, we'll wrap up with where is Crit Hit going to be in the next like 2 months, because there's a lot of events and a lot of things that are really exciting that are just coming up. So sit back and enjoy the Crit Hit Audio Zine. This is the Crit Hit Audio Zine. All right, so first of all, a couple of admin notes. I am standing outside of my work doing this right now because it's getting a little bit warm and my car is hot, and that's usually where I try and record during breaks or lunches or something like that. So I'm doing it outside, so you can probably hear birds and road noise because it's actually really nice outside, but like too hot in a car. So anyway, sorry we missed last week as well. Things were getting really super hectic at work, and there was no way that I could just break free to try and record something because, oh my God, it was terrible. I had a pretty hellish work week. So between that and, family commitments and other things that I had going on, it was going to be too hard for me to get something out. And so I apologize, but here we are. And in the meantime, it also looks like, and I don't know if anybody else is having this problem, but like, fucking Anchor is not notifying me when I'm getting voicemails. Like, I opened up the Anchor app today, and normally I listen through Spotify or Google Podcasts. Those are the two players that I normally listen to the show on, just out of habit, because that's where all my podcasts are. I looked in the Anchor app and like there's two voicemails. So we're going to get to those voicemails. Like, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I'm not really happy with that part of Anchor that it's not notifying me when I get voicemails. But by all means, jump on the Anchor app to leave a voicemail, and I'm going to respond to them and put them on the show and make you internet famous with our, tens of fans that we have. Just kidding. It's a little more than that. But still, yeah, I'll put you on. So sorry about that. And let's get started with some voicemails. So Jordan left a voicemail about where he was kind of reading my mind a little bit. I wanted to start having GMs talk about the games that they're running. And Jordan is running Mutants and Masterminds, which is awesome. But he had actually kind of a better idea than I had, because I was like, well, just, kind of hype up your game, like what you're playing. And I still want to do that, like what your adventure is, or if you got a unique system that you're trying out or you're playing. But Jordan wanted to talk about also some of the history of Mutants and Mastermind, which is cool, because as much as I love exploring systems and things like that, I'm also kind of really into the lore of video games and sort of like how they got created or where they came from and stuff like that. Like, Savage Worlds has a really unique history, right? Like, it was, it stemmed from another game, basically, and it's really kind of cool. So I love that kind of shit. So Jordan, yeah, by all means, we're gonna have to link up and get you to talk about the history of Mutants, the history of Mutants and Masterminds, and specifically what you plan on running. And any other GMs out there, let's try and do that. If you guys are interested, email me at jim@crithitaz.com, and we'll schedule a time, and we'll maybe use the Anchor app, or we'll figure something out to try and get you guys to hype up the games that you're running and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I totally want to hear about all of that. So let me know.
Hey man, it's Rich from Cockatrice Nuggets. Just wanted to say that I've been following you for a while and really enjoying the things you're doing. And you nailed it with the conversion. A lot of stuff is so easy to convert. Like, the hardest things I find to convert are stuff that has a lot of new monsters, or a lot of new spells, or a lot of new magic items. Usually, if I've got a module from first edition, I can run it in fifth edition super easily just by saying, okay, that's a goblin. Goblins are this in 5e. Okay, that's an orc. That's a gnoll, you know? It's really easy, especially if they're common monsters or common magic items even. Hey, if there's a arrow plus one in there, then it's an arrow plus one, you know, matter what system you're using. Good to hear someone talking about it, and keep up the good work. Talk to you later.
That was Rich from Cockatrice Nuggets. Yeah, you brought up some really good points about, you know, just finding something that's similar. And I was thinking about this recently because there is an adventure for 5th edition, for Pathfinder that I want to convert to 5th edition. And sometimes it's simple as just kind of doing a Google search for that particular monster and then seeing what the stats are. And one of the things that sort of came to mind is, like, that's also your opportunity, you know, not only to find a creature that's similar or the same for the system that you want to convert it to, but also to maybe tweak it to make it special for your game. So let's say you don't really use kobolds, because kobolds are kind of like a low level thing, and you run characters that are maybe in that tier 2 range where they're above third level, and you're like, kobolds just don't do it for you anymore. But what if they did? What if you brought in kobolds where it's like, instead of like a whole pack of kobolds, it's just like 2 or 3 at a time, but they're all just fucking ripped. Like, they're just like roid kobolds, right? And you give them like bugbear stats or an owlbear stats or something that's like a totally different creature, where you just swap in those stat blocks out for them. And that could be kind of fun too, because now you're taking something that is expected and you're totally turning it around into something that's unexpected. And I think that's really super interesting. Something else that you know, that I'm really kind of digging as I'm looking through, because we have quite a few Pathfinder stuff that I'm looking through. One of the things that I'm really liking is the OSR Anchorites, which is all the people that are on Anchor talking about OSR games and stuff like that. Something that came up a couple weeks ago was that, you know, basically doing a fixed number of hit points for, like, the average hit points. So, you know, for like a D8 hit die, just call it five hit points. So if you have a 3D8 hit die creature, or a 3D hit die creature, you just like, boom, he's got 15 hit points. It's just a real simple, easy conversion. And I'm really liking that, along with the ease of converting things and trying to keep it as simple and as simple and as quick as possible to do it on the fly. And I think using a tool like taking median hit points for the hit points of a creature is the easiest way to do that. Armor class, you just kind of can always wing that, really, whatever sort of fantasy game that you're doing, whatever the equivalent to armor class is, you can always kind of wing that too. Like, again, by looking up creatures that are similar in what you think the category or the broad generalizations of they would be. So, you know, again, like a kobold, you know, you can find a kobold. But if it's this other creature that's like, it's a little creature and it's going to, you know, not really do too much damage, and it's just kind of a first level thing, then, you know, pick something like a skeleton or a kobold, or, you know, or something equally in that sort of same challenge rating. And I hate to use the word challenge rating, but, you know, kind of in that same area. And that's going to make all of that so much easier. And really lets you kind of flex a little bit. Really lets you get creative with what you can do with just the framework of a solid adventure. So thanks for that voicemail. So one of the things I want to talk about today is sort of game design theory. I was looking over some of the ideas that I had for Hellbreed, which is the urban horror superhero game that I'm making, and I was talking, you know, it's always when I'm talking to John that I start kind of ideas start to kind of flow, because he's just that kind of guy. He's so opinionated and he has so many great insights, and we don't always line up on our ideals about how games should be, but the fact that he is so sort of forward thinking, or just thinks at a different level than I do, really kind of gets, you know, the old brain cranking up. And I start thinking about you know, my game and the kinds of things that I want to do in my game. And I want to sort of take a moment to reflect on some of the ideas that I was having after a conversation with John. And one of them is, you know, I've always said that a big inspiration for me was Savage Worlds. Savage Worlds really changed everything for me. By the time I got to Savage Worlds, I was kind of dejected. I was kind of, you know, beat up. I kept trying to find like sort of a home system. I had come out of third edition just kind of tired of third edition. I was tired of the nuance. I was tired of, you know, getting bogged down in the rules, even with 3.5 coming out. I was tired of just how much work it seemed like to just play the game, not even thinking about structuring a campaign or even structuring an adventure, writing an adventure. Just the mechanics of running the game just seemed really heavy to me and really slow and counterintuitive to the sort of fast smash cut pace that I tend to run games in. Because I'm kind of ADD, so when I run games, like I tend to run things at a fairly fast pace because that's how I think. And unless I'm doing like horror, then I really really try and slow down and take my time and let things sort of breathe. But if it's not that, then it's action, and I run things like an action movie with all the pacing of an action movie, which sometimes jumps around a little bit and sometimes sort of has leaps in logic. But nonetheless, you know, if you watch a good action movie, there's a lot of that happening, and you just sort of have to check your brain at the door and enjoy the ride, and that's sort of how I run games. And I found, you know, again, I was finding third edition was just not doing that for me. So I was bouncing from system to system, trying to find something to run a superhero game in, because I love superhero games. I've always been a fan of running superhero games. It's one of my favorite genres to do. And, you know, I had ran through, trying to do something in third edition that wasn't working for me. We tried GURPS. I broke GURPS. We tried D6. D6 lasted for a good while. So D6 was the old system that Star Wars used to run in, and I used to run a lot of Star Wars. So that held on for a while. Oh, and somewhere in there early on was Palladium. So Palladium Supers, I think is what it was called. Or Palladium Heroes Unlimited, that was it. Palladium Heroes Unlimited was like one of the first systems we did. And then I ran a long Ninja Turtles campaign, which was amazing. But again, the system was bogging me down. So we bounced from the Heroes Unlimited / Ninja Turtles Palladium system to GURPS. To D6. D6 held on for a long time, but eventually D6 kind of broke on me. And I've always said that superhero genres really will make or break your system. Like, if you have any question about this new game system that you're designing, throw superheroes in the mix, because that tends to fuck your shit up. Like, it's just the way it is. Like, it's just, I think, because the power creep and level advancement really stress the rules, the foundations of the game. And so becomes, yeah, you start to see all the cracks in games. But then there was a new, so we're getting, you know, we kind of, GURPS I think was the last one where we just kind of gave up, and I was kind of dejected, and I was like, I don't know, you know, maybe I just won't run superhero games anymore. I'll stick to Call of Cthulhu, or I'll stick to, you know, other things. And I caught some chatter online about this game called Savage Worlds, and everyone was saying how it's fun, fast, and furious. And I was like, well, let's see what that's about. And so I started digging in into what was Savage Worlds, right? And one of the first things I found was, like, they had a lot of pulp stuff, like fucking pulp, like 50s, 40s serial pulp, you know, Flash Gordon, you know, Indiana Jones kind of things, like this sort of just, you know, kinetic energy kind of flavor to a lot of the stuff. And people always described it as a pulp game. What pulp games means is that you do exactly what I was talking about in an action movie, where you sort of check your brain out at the door and just go with the flow and the spirit of action, right? Of an action story. And I was like, wow, that's really fucking cool. And that made me sort of start digging into like pulp serial. So I would watch, you know, Rocket Men from the Moon and Flash Gordon, that sort of stuff. And I really developed a love for serials, and I started rewatching, like, you know, Indiana Jones and that sort of stuff. And I was like, man, this is the way to do it. The rules for Savage Worlds, part of the reason that they allowed for this is because Shane Hensley and his, you know, wisdom, the way that he designed the game, really started taking things and paring them down, you know. There was no need for a fireball spell and an ice spell and a magic missile and electricity bolt thing. Like, there was no need to have all these separate spells. Why not just call it Bolt and then flavor it the way that you wanted it with some additional things? So mechanically, Bolt in Savage Worlds, the way that it used to work, I don't know about the new edition, but Bolt is basically, it's all of that. It's your magic missile, it's your fireball, it's your ice, it's whatever you want it to be. And then you just sort of add a flavor to it, like, because it's electricity, it'll short out any electrical things or whatever, right? Or, you know, if it hits armor, it'll electrocute you in the armor if you're doing like a fantasy thing. Like, it began to give me the permission to say, I don't need to know all the details. I just need to know generally how it works so we can move on with the story. Instead of looking up individual spells, for example, we can just call it one thing, and one thing can apply to like four different things, or as many different things as you can think of. And it was the idea of paring things down to their base actions that really appealed to me, because there was less for me to remember, and it was easier for me to manage things like that in my head. Plus, this whole system itself was really revolved around keeping the action flowing as quickly as possible. You know, the dice resolution is brilliant, and there's just so many things about Savage Worlds that are clean and intuitive, and to me, game-changing at the time. They really were a game-changer, where I looked at, you know, things like my disdain for hit points stems all the way back to Savage Worlds, because I've never liked hit points, and I still don't. I fucking hate hit points. And so, you know, looking at Savage Worlds and how they do their wound systems, you know, it's a little clunky sometimes, but it's still really cool, like, not to think about hit points, to think about things in terms of wounds. And all those things, you know, really, really inspired me to want to start gaming again. And I started playing games in genres that I normally didn't care about, like fantasy. I played Evernight. I love that Savage Worlds has all these unique takes on settings and tropes. So Evernight, the bad guys won, and now you're fighting against it. So it's not like you're trying to stop Saruman. Like, Saruman already happened. Now you're trying to win the world back. Like, I love that. Necessary Evil was their superhero thing, and I fucking love that idea. Like, all the superheroes are dead. The only people left to save the world, villains. You're a villain. So it's basically like Suicide Squad before Suicide Squad, or, well, before the movie anyway, before it became kind of popular. But it's very sort of Suicide Squad feeling. And all that is just really amazing. And, you know, when it comes to the design of Hellbreed, there's so much that I'm borrowing liberally from Savage Worlds. But then, you know, also talking to John Wick, who's, you know, he's a friend of mine, and talking, like, we love to sort of like poke each other back and forth with design things, because, you know, John has an answer for everything. Any kind of question that I have, he always has something. And so, you know, talking with him inspired me to start really looking at some of the things that I'm doing in Hellbreed specifically. And partly from being influenced by people like Alan Barr, who, you know, has become a really big supporter of Crit Hit. And you know, I think I can call him a friend. He's been for me there for a couple of, like, personal conversations that really have little to do with a convention. And you know, he's a brilliant dude, and Tiny D6 is a great system. It's a really great system. You know, almost to the point, like, at one point I was thinking I should just do Hellbreed as a Tiny D6 game. But there's other things that I want to add to it that I don't think kind of fit that aesthetic. But one of the things that I'm taking from Tiny D6 and from the idea of Savage Worlds, of paring things down, and talking to John about some, you know, what certain things mean in the game and things like that. You know, for Hellbreed, I'm going to do something where there's no skill lists. There's no individual skill lists, but there will be a mechanical thing for things that you pick for your character to be good at. Much like Tiny D6, you basically, you know, you have only a couple things in your character sheet, but they all mean something. And so instead of me putting together the list, because in Hellbreed you're playing a human that becomes a monster, and then those monsters have to go out and save the world. And the problem is that saving the world is a war, and in war or in any kind of rebellion, you sometimes have to do things that are not good. History is written by the winners, and sometimes, you know, when that happens, you have to do things that are not necessarily can be necessarily seen as good things to do after the fact. Like, there's a lot of ugly things that need to happen sometimes, and that's sort of what Hellbreed is about. The Hellbreed Gospels is what it's called. So you're playing one of these Hellbreed, which is a monster that goes out and is fighting for the world, and by doing some kind of terrible things. But since you're basically a human and you have sort of a lot of human traits, on top of like your monster traits and stuff like that, I wanted to think about just abolishing skill lists and just making it like a real person. Like, just pick three things that you as a person are good at. You know, pick two things that you're good at because of your occupation, right? You know, pick one thing that you're good at because of your hobby. Now, these are things that like Savage Worlds does, and there's a giant list of things. And but I like the idea of, like, you know, things that you're just kind of good at, you know, yourself because you're interested in, like hobbies or whatever, things from your professional life that you bring because you learn. You know, sometimes the things that you do professionally may not necessarily be things that you do in everyday life, and sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Like, if you're an accountant, like, you're really good at like tracking down money, right? But that may, you might not do any of that in your personal life, but you're really good at it professionally, right? Or if you're a project manager, you know, maybe you're really good at organizing things, but that's not what you do with your spare time. In your spare time, you know, you're athletic. You go and you do a lot of gymnastics or something like that, right? So I wanted to talk about, you know, how in games you should kind of think about how to make the game simpler, that gets the point across and still allows you to tell the story that you want to tell about the characters that you want to tell and the way that you want to tell with using less things. So paring things down to their essential core. And I think that's important. And it's something that I'm thinking about lately, especially because I'm starting to crank, you know, get the gears cranking on Hellbreed and getting more playtests and stuff like that going. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm getting rid of my skill list. I'm letting players take ownership of their characters and tell me what they're good at, you know, what as people they're good at, because ultimately I want this game to be about people. And I think if you allow players to come up with things on their own, chances are they're going to come up with things that are way more creative than you can as somebody who's GMing or making a game, because they have an idea. You're inspiring them with an idea, and they're going to roll with it in a way that you may not expect. And again, a lot of times it's going to be better than whatever you can come up with and stick it on a piece of paper. Let them do it. And so yeah, just some kind of general thoughts on paring down things and streamlining gaming. Thanks. Quick update on what's going on with Crit Hit. On Friday, May 3rd, we're going to be at Snakes and Lattes. We're there to support our friends from Dice Tactics. They made a cool dice-based game that utilizes an app that they're working with. They're also the guys that made the Magic Dice Roller app, which is a dice rolling app that has Crit Hit D6s on it. So it's free. It's on the wherever you get your apps from. So the iTunes App Store, I don't know what they call it on Apple, and the Google Play Store. So definitely check out the Magic Dice Roller app, and then also we'll be talking more about their Dice Tactics game as we go on. And then this weekend, we're going to be at ZapCon. So that's on the 4th and the 5th. ZapCon is a arcade/pinball focused convention. So if you're into like retro video games, which I am, I love retro video games, you know, come by. We're going to be running a couple game tables down there because they have like a lounge where they have like retro console gaming. And in there, we're going to be having some tabletop games. I'm going to be running some RPGs, and it's going to be a really good time. If you see me and I'm not running an RPG, like maybe see if you can challenge me to like some Galaga or Burger Time or something like that, because those are the games that I absolutely fucking love. And then at the end of the month, we're going to be over at Phoenix Fan Fusion. We are running tabletop gamings there, as well as the Game Central desk and some RPGs. So we're going to have a pretty decent sized presence there, doing what we do and preaching the gospel of Crit Hit to a much broader audience. Quick note on that, we are looking for RPG game master. So if you want to run an RPG and get earn a badge to go to Phoenix Fan Fusion, just hit me up, jim@crithitaz.com, and I'll get you some information and get you signed up. And we need those pretty quick, because it's kind of a last minute thing that they needed some help with, and we think we can help them. So and in exchange, you'll get a badge to go to Phoenix Fan Fusion, and that's pretty cool just for running some games. And let's see what else is going on. Oh, yes. There's been a lot of questions about, are we going to have more vendor space? The answer is yes. How much exactly is still something that I'm working with. We got approved to take over a little bit more room in the hotel than we had originally contracted for, to make room for some more vendors. This is also going to allow us to expand some of our game selection. So our D&D Dragon Hall is going to expand quite a bit as we celebrate 5th edition all the way back to the original white box editions of D&D, using either the actual rules or you know, modern takes on them. So stuff like White Box and Labyrinth Lord and that kind of thing. So we're expanding, so we're going to have more RPGs, we're going to have more vendors, we're going to have more board games than we've ever had before. Plus, you know, stuff like our Gallant Knight Games showcase room, where, you know, Gallant Knight's going to show up with all their bevy of games that they've produced, and some of their recent partnerships, or I'm not sure how you would word it, but, you know, now they're working with, like, Diogo Nogueira, who, you know, did Sharp Swords and Sinister Spells, which I'm a huge fan of, and Dark Streets and Darker Secrets, which is like my new love. It's an urban fantasy version of the game. And Solar Blades and Cosmic Spells, which is a really cool post-apocalyptic sci-fi game. You know, plus other stuff that they're doing with Barrel Rider Games, which is an OSR publisher. Plus they have a whole bunch of stuff that's outside of their Tiny D6 line that they're working on. Plus, you know, more Tiny D6 stuff like Pirates and Cthulhu and Cyberpunk. And they're doing all kinds of wonderful stuff. And Beach Patrol, they're going to have their sort of Baywatch-esque RPG of running in slow motion on a beach. And yes, that's a real thing, and yes, Alan is very excited to play it, and I think you should be too. So all that things is making Crit Hit really expand in ways that we hadn't quite anticipated on some of this, and we're actually really kind of excited, because it's like, oh wow, we're really going from, you know, we're taking another step forward to being a larger event. But always first and foremost, when we do these things, there's a lot of discussions and meetings and stuff that we have. Whenever we do these types of things, you know, my biggest input at this point, because there's a lot of other people working on Crit Hit besides me and Crystal, although we're the primary people that sort of head things, but we have a whole staff of people, including Brad and Ron and Richard, who are really taking the reins on a lot of the smaller details. But in the end, you know, my vision and focus is always to make sure that everything we do, even as we grow, is sort of still retains that Crit Hit flavor, that sort of, you know, people have called it the punk con, which is kind of cool. You know, that sort of punk con vibe. And I like that, and I want to make sure that as we grow, all the things that we do support that and make sure that we always retain that and have that in mind. So a lot of exciting stuff coming down the pipeline. Hopefully you can join us. If you don't have a badge already, make sure you get one on crithitaz.com. And as usual, follow us on all the social medias that you can think of. We're on there. and so it's always at CritHitAZ. I try and keep things pretty consistent. And that's about it. Until next time.